From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Violence in America is out of control. Some members of Congress and the Clinton administration are blaming violence on TV for some of the escalating violence in real life. Today and tomorrow on Fresh Air, we'll look at current attempts to regulate violence on TV. Today we'll talk to Senator Paul Simon, who's been spearheading the congressional campaign against violence on TV. We'll also talk with Marjorie Hines, director of the ACLU's Arts Censorship Project, Brandon Tartikoff, former president of NBC's entertainment division, and TV critic David Bianculli. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Clinton broke ground today for a memorial to commemorate the victims of the Pan Am 103 bombing. 5 years ago today, 270 people died in that terrorist attack over Lockerbie, Scotland. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
The president told the families and friends of the Lockerbie victims that the monument would be a lasting testament to the innocents who died. He said the attack on the Pan Am jet was an attack not just on the individuals aboard, but on America. The president said the rising tide of democracy is turning against countries that sponsor terrorism. Two Libyans have been charged with the bombing. Libya has refused to turn the men over for trial despite international sanctions against Libya. But several news organizations have suggested that Syria and Iran may also have been involved. Today, Mr. Clinton only mentioned the two indicted Libyans. He is planning to meet Syrian President Hafez al-Assad in Geneva in January. Assad is indispensable to the administration's efforts to forge a peace in the Middle East. At the White House, I'm Mara Liasson.
Negotiators for Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization began private talks today at an undisclosed location in Paris. The two sides are reported to have the basis for a compromise on the most difficult obstacle to implementation of the Palestinian self-rule agreement. That's the question of who should control border checkpoints between Egypt and Gaza and Jericho and Jordan. Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin told the Israeli parliament today that the talks are aimed at coordinating a Palestinian presence at the border crossings. Israel was to have begun withdrawing its troops from the occupied territories on December 13th, but the implementation was delayed because of the border dispute. The head of Russia's newly successful ultra-nationalist party, Vladimir Zhirinovsky, left Moscow today on a brief visit to Austria and Germany. NPR's Deirdre Berger has more.
During a brief stopover in Munich, Zhirinovsky met with Gerhard Frey, the head of the far-right wing party, the German People's Union. The two right-wing leaders have close political contacts. Zhirinovsky called for a strategic partnership between Germany and Russia. The Russian leader, whose nationalist party won nearly a quarter of the vote in recent elections, flew from Germany onto Austria. Meanwhile, German police in three states today raided homes of suspected right-wing radicals, arresting 18 people and confiscating propaganda material. Intelligence officials estimate about 1,700 acts of right-wing violence in Germany this year, down from 2,600 last year. I'm Dieter Berger in Frankfurt.
On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 10 points to close at 3,745. Declines led advances by a margin of 3-2 and heavy trading of 266 million shares. This is NPR. The Department of Housing and Urban Development said today that cities and counties in nine Midwestern states will get $125 million in grants for flood recovery projects. The money is to be used to rebuild houses, repair levees, and buy back land that's particularly vulnerable to flooding. The agency already provided $75 million to the Midwest in August. A new survey of 26 American cities finds that the demand for emergency food and shelter increased this year. It was the 11th year in a row that demand went up. NPR's John Greenberg has more.
Every year, the U.S. Conference of Mayors conducts a survey of cities. This year, in places that include Charleston, Louisville, and Minneapolis, the average increase in people asking for food was 13%. The average jump in requests for emergency shelter was 10%. St. Louis Mayor Freeman Bosley said the most shocking change was the rise in homeless families.
Previous year's estimates have shown families accounting for about one-third of the population seeking help. But this year, cities put families with children at 43% of this population.
The survey also shows an increase in the number of homeless people addicted to drugs or alcohol. Spending on emergency food and shelter increased, but still, city officials report that about 20% of people in need had to be turned away. This is John Greenberg in Washington.
The federal budget deficit grew to nearly $84 billion in the first 2 months of this fiscal year, up 2.8% from last year. The Treasury Department said the growth in the deficit was caused by higher costs for federal retirement and medical benefits. The report said the deficit will probably grow again as the government resumes spending on the savings and loan bailout after a delay of more than a year and a half. The administration predicts the deficit will grow to $259 billion this year. This is NPR.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The TV industry has been given an ultimatum. Attorney General Janet Reno warned, unless the industry moved immediately to cut back on violence, the White House and Congress would seek laws to do it. My guest, Senator Paul Simon, has given the industry a January 1st deadline to come up with a plan for reducing glamorized violence, or he will offer appropriate legislation. There are already 9 bills that have been put before Congress. The proposals include banning violence from TV during the hours children watch, issuing a violence report card and naming the sponsors of violent shows, flashing warnings in the corner of the screen during violent programs, and requiring new TVs to have a device that would enable parents to screen out violent programs. Is this creating a chilling effect on free speech and creativity? Are TV programs filled with gratuitous violence? And does violence on TV lead to violence in the real world? These are some of the questions we'll be looking at today and tomorrow. Paul Simon, Democratic senator from Illinois, has spearheaded the congressional campaign against violence on TV. I asked him what he plans if the industry doesn't make a move before his January 1st deadline.
If the industry doesn't respond, then I will ask the National Institute of Mental Health or the Center for Disease Control or the Federal Communications Commission to appoint a group that would monitor television so that once a year we would get a report. This is what ABC is doing. This is what CBS is doing. This is what NBC is doing. This is what HBO is doing. This is what Showtime and the other networks are doing. This is what's happening in the hours when children watch the most. This is what's happening in terms of violent promos. My feeling is the progress that we have made in programming this fall on the broadcast networks can be sustained if we get this annual report. And I think with the annual report also would put pressure on cable to do a better job.
Cable would be included in the report?
I think it has to be.
Would the advertisers of the shows that are reported on be mentioned, too? Would this be a way of basically suggesting to viewers that they boycott the advertisers of shows that they are displeased with?
Well, I don't think that will be part of the report, but I don't think there's any question that advertisers generally will try to avoid programs that do have too much violence. We already have a cautionary notice now on certain programs with violence, and the networks have already discovered that advertisers do not like to get on programs that have those words of warning. It is, frankly, one of the more meaningful things that has happened in the last year.
You say you prefer that the industry regulate itself rather than the federal government regulating the television industry. Why is self-regulation your preference?
Well, I think we have to be sensitive to First Amendment problems. I'm a member of the American Civil Liberties Union. I do not want to do anything that in any way restricts responsible free speech in our country or even much of irresponsible free speech. I do not want the federal government censoring television, as many countries have. But I do think we have to recognize we have a serious problem and that we have to encourage responsible behavior by the television industry.
Now, some of these bills that propose regulating in one way or another violent programs on TV exempt from those regulations news programs, documentaries, educational programs, and sports events. Do you think that they should be exempted from those bills, and are they exempted from the report cards that you would like to issue?
They are exempt from the report card. When I say they're exempt, I'm talking about news. I'm not talking about what some people call docudramas, which can be abused, and we have had some abuse there. But the difference between news violence, and I think some of the news programs do have too much violence, but the difference between that news violence and violence on entertainment television, the news violence, when you see a scene from Bosnia, you see relatives crying, you see violence in all its dimensions and all its tragedy. In entertainment violence, too often you have the hero or heroine going around for 25 minutes killing people in a very antiseptic way, what one researcher calls happy violence. You don't see any unhappy results of that. You don't see relatives grieving. And, of course, the hero or heroine remains untouched throughout all of it. And young people learn that violence is a way of solving problems, and the second thing they learn is that violence is fun. Both lessons are wrong lessons to learn.
Yes, you oppose what you describe as glamorizing violence. Is this what you mean, violence that looks cool and has no consequences?
That is correct.
What are the problems you run into when there's a committee that's trying to decide what compelling, complex, humanistic portrayals of violence are and what glamorized, inappropriate, bad portrayals of violence are? Would your committee have to make those distinctions when drawing up guidelines?
Well, I don't know if you make the distinctions in the guidelines. There are some subjective decisions that have to be made. But in fact, in most cases, it is very clear. It is not that much of a problem. Obviously, if you're going to have a film about the Civil War, you're going to have some violence. But it should not be portrayed in a glamorous way. And I think people pretty much understand that distinction.
Let me take a couple of movies as examples for a second. Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood, two films about inner-city life and gangs and drugs. To some people, these films were important movies in finally making anti-violent statements because the movies were so clear in the consequences of violence. But a lot of film distributors were worried at first about taking these films into their theaters because they were afraid showing these movies might lead to violence in the theaters. So it seems to me it sometimes really isn't clear. There isn't unanimity about what is a good and what is a bad portrayal of violence and what the consequences of showing a film would be.
I think it is not always clear, and I'm not suggesting that answers are going to be easy. But I think in most cases we can recognize that. Since you mentioned films, my wife and I recently bought the film Laura. And your listeners who are older will recognize the name of that movie. It was Jean Tierney and Dana Andrews. And it really struck my wife and me as we watched that, how the two leading actors and actresses were smoking all the time, drinking heavily. That's part of the old films. We gradually moved away from that, and in the process, I think, have helped to change conduct because we imitate what we see on the screen. We know from history, from what's happening on smoking and drinking, that what appears on that screen does have an impact on us, and if we can get a positive message on violence rather than the negative messages out there now, I think it will be helpful in our society.
But here's a question. Sometimes to have a positive message about violence means showing violence and the consequences of that violence. If you have a TV program that shows violence and shows the consequences of it, and the moral of the story is violence is a terrible thing, but in the course of telling that story you see acts of violence, how would that be interpreted in your report card?
Well, I would leave that up to people who are more expert in this field than I am. I'm not here with all the answers. What I am here saying is that we have a problem, and the American people are entitled to know, are we making progress in dealing with this problem, or are we not?
I guess what I'm wondering is, are you confident that a committee could deal with the ambiguity of art? The ambiguity of screenplays and programs.
No question about it. And most acts of violence really fall into one category or another fairly clearly. And I also think the committee might make recommendations. For example, on British television, they follow the same code that was followed in the ancient Greek theater. And that in the ancient Greek theater, any murders occurred off stage and were referred to by the actors or actresses on stage. A little in the way the film, the TV series Murder, She Wrote, or Columbo, does the same thing. In the British television rules are that no murder shall take place on screen unless it is absolutely essential to the plot of the show.
It's funny you should mention those two shows, because those two shows, I think, are particularly designed for older Americans.
Well,
they're not younger people's programs.
No, but I think you can have younger people's programs that are nonviolent, that have constructive messages. I think we have people who are creative enough to do that.
Well, let me get back to the Boys in the Hood question, Menace to Society. I'm not sure if you've seen the films or not, but are those films that you consider to be constructive films in their message or negative films in their message because they actually show acts of violence?
I have avoided commenting on specific films and specific shows simply because once I get down that line, I end up trying to pretend I'm an expert, and I don't pretend to be. I'm not an expert.
Some people are saying that there are members of Congress who are trying to make violence on TV more of the issue than violence in real life. In other words, guns on TV are getting more attention, some people say, than actually focusing on the problem of guns in the streets. I know the Brady Bill was passed. Many people think that doesn't go nearly far enough in terms of getting guns out of the hands of civilians. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
I don't think it's a fair criticism. If I can take myself as an example, I was a co-sponsor of the Brady Bill. I'm the chief sponsor of the bill to crack down on gun dealers. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill to outlaw a number of weapons that I think have no place in our society. I've also been one of the leaders in working on problems of employment and poverty, which are obviously causes of crime also. Those in the industry who say, well, we're saying that television is the cause of crime in our society, simply misread it. And those who simply deny that there's any relationship between crime in our society and violence on the screen are ignoring all the research.
How did this become an important issue for you, this issue of television violence?
I got into this very accidentally. I checked into a motel room one night, turned on my television set, and there in front of me in living color, someone was being sawed in half by a chainsaw. I'm old enough to know it's not real, but it bothered me that night, and I thought, what happens to a 10-year-old who watches this? So the next morning, I called my office and said, there has to be research somewhere about what happens to children on this. And they came back and said, there's all kinds of research. And the Surgeon General has warned us, the National Institute of Mental Health has warned us, but no one had given it any attention. So I called some of the representatives of the television industry together and said, I don't want censorship. I'm an ACLU member. I'm sensitive to civil liberties, but we have to do something about it. And they said, well, we can't get together to establish standards because it would violate the antitrust laws. And that's how I got in the whole thing.
No, I think that chainsaw episode you were talking about is probably from a movie. It was probably a movie that was being shown on TV, yes?
That's what they tell me. I frankly didn't keep the show on long enough to find out what it was from.
If your report card goes into effect, analyzing the amount of violence on each TV network and cable network, how would it work in reducing, and actually reducing violence on TV? How would you hope it would be effective?
I think it would be effective simply because it would be bad public relations for any network that got a bad report card. And I think you would see the report card each year stimulating further discussion and probably some further research in this field. I think if the American people are informed, they can make the right decisions. Right now, there is on the part of most Americans an intuitive belief that violence on the television screen adds to violence in our society. but a report card and a little more knowledge about the research, I think, would be helpful.
I know you'd like to see more positive messages on TV. Janet Reno said something to the effect that she hopes one day public service announcements will become unnecessary because the TV shows will have virtually become those announcements. Would you like to see that?
Yes, I think you can convey in positive ways that violence is the wrong thing. But when not only children, but a president of the United States says, "Make my day," what he is conveying with that is that violence is an answer to the problem, and violence gives you pleasure. We need to convey in our stories a different message.
Last question. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I wish I could answer that question for you.
Senator Simon, thank you very much for talking
with us. Thank you very much.
Senator Paul Simon of Illinois. We'll hear from Marjorie Hines of the ACLU after a break. This is Fresh Air. First Amendment activists are concerned about the current attempts to restrict violence on television. They say it's unconstitutional for government to regulate the content of TV, and more subtle forms of government pressure have a chilling effect on free speech. Marjorie Hines is the director of the Arts Censorship Project of the American Civil Liberties Union and author of the book Sex, Sin, and Blasphemy, A Guide to America's Censorship Wars. She opposes Senator Simon's idea of a government agency monitoring violence on television and issuing a report on its findings. I asked her why.
Well, the obvious purpose is, first of all, he's singling out a certain type of content in the arts and entertainment, which he disapproves of, he disfavors. That's clear. And the purpose of this government commission, it's essentially a rating or classification board. It's another type of classification board. And although ratings and classifications are not as insidious and direct a form of censorship as criminal penalties or direct orders by the FCC or some other government agency, they have the same intent, which is to suppress, to intimidate, and to chill certain types of expression. And they suffer also from the same deficiencies of vagueness and lack of definition and subjectivity. I mean, who are these people who are going to decide what is... What are the definitions even going to be if this commission is told that it's going to issue a report card on gratuitous violence or violence for violence's sake or excessive violence? What do those words mean, and how are they to distinguish between news reports, sports, violence in Schindler's List or Bonnie and Clyde or Shakespeare or... There's just such a vast array of violent content throughout our culture, and there always has been, and in arts and literature reflect that. So you have a government body that is going to be completely stymied by impossible definitional problems, and that is the reason that the courts have consistently struck down any governmental attempt to suppress or regulate so-called violent or excessively violent content. Primarily on grounds of vagueness. You just can't define it. It's too subjective.
Well, you say that a report card would have a chilling effect on the media, but isn't that exactly the effect that the people behind the report card wanted to have? And doesn't a lot of the American public want it to have that effect, too? Don't a lot of people want to see less violence on television?
Well, first you have to ask what the definition of violence is. I mean, Janet Reno is a perfect example. Attorney General Reno, when she made her threat to the television industry, said that she would exclude sports because, in her opinion, sports are people watching sports events, that's a healthy outlet for natural, aggressive, and violent impulses. Well, that's just a perfect example of how subjective this is. So there's such a broad range of public opinion on this, and everybody has a different notion of what they think is offensive or harmful, that I would not agree that the American public wants any kind of legislation.
Is there ever a time when regulation of violence
depicted in movies or TV is appropriate, do you think?
Well, I think the Supreme Court came up with the right test in the mid-60s, and that test has been followed consistently in a number of cases that we sometimes call copycat cases, where a rock group or a magazine or what have you was sued for having described or arguably suggested a certain violent or otherwise antisocial or undesirable action. And basically, unless the speech amounts to direct incitement to violence or other unlawful conduct and is intended to incite, almost a solicitation standard, then it's protected. It's protected by the Constitution. Even advocacy of the overthrow of the government is protected by the Constitution, unless it amounts to direct incitement. And that's the proper standard, because any lesser standard gets us into a realm where the government or private censors are arguing this speech, this book, this tract, this song, this TV show is dangerous because it fosters bad attitudes. It gives people bad ideas. And that's thought control.
You are the director of the ACLU Arts Censorship Project. I'd like you to step back a second from TV violence and look at the big picture for us. Where are the efforts coming now to regulate speech in the arts and entertainment? Put this effort in a larger context for us, if you will.
You know, it's hard. It's a good question. It's hard to pinpoint the source. What we have seen in the last decade or so is a mentality developing, a censorship mentality, and I think this does come in waves in U.S. history when you look back, whether it's violence or sex, which tend to be the two main, or subversion, which was the other target earlier in American history, speech that was considered somehow politically threatening. Certainly in the last 10 years, and I think starting with the Parents Music Resource Center and the attacks on music, on rock music, and then following with the Mies Commission and pornography and a lot of hysteria about sexuality in art and entertainment, and now the current phase with violence. But what it all has in common is this censorship mentality, what I refer to in my book as scapegoating speech. Ever since at least the mid-80s, it has become a very popular, notion with a large proportion of the public that we can blame our social problems, we can attribute our social problems to the messengers. People, in other words, have it exactly backwards. The artists and entertainers who are reflecting, who are commenting upon, who may in fact be expressing antisocial attitudes, but the people who are giving us the message about our culture and society are the ones that are being blamed. And somehow there's this magical notion that if we just close our eyes and close our ears or suppress the message, the problems will go away.
You know, I think some people would say it's hard to talk about violence on television in the same context that you talk about censorship of the arts, that television isn't art, it's the entertainment industry, and the people who control it are people out to make a buck, and sometimes the way to make a buck is to exploit people's feelings about sex and violence and so on. And you know, of course, there's going to be some pretty exploitive programs on. And it's not the same issue as the arts. Is that fair?
Well, it may be fair, but it's also elitist. The Supreme Court said a long time ago, they haven't always abided by this, but they were right when they said it, that it's largely because government can't make principled distinctions in this area, that we leave matters of taste and style largely to the individual. High art, low art, popular culture, the ballet African or new dancing in the local bar. I mean, why should they have different treatment just because if it's both new dancing, just because a more educated individual may prefer one to the other?
Marjorie Hines directs the ACLU's Arts Censorship Project. She's the author of Sex, Sin, and Blasphemy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. This is NPR, National Public Radio. Thank you.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Network and cable executives are being forced to make a decision. Either regulate the violence in their own broadcasts or let Congress do it for them. Coming up, we talk with the former president of NBC Entertainment, Brandon Tartikoff. He says the network lineup is less violent now than it was 5 years ago, and it's not because of government pressure. And we talk with a man who watches more TV than most people involved in the debate, our TV critic, David Bianculli. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Ann Taylor. In Moscow, Russian leader Boris Yeltsin has ordered that the State Security Ministry be disbanded and that a new internal security unit be organized. The ministry followed the KGB. NPR's Mike Schuster reports from Moscow.
In issuing an executive order dissolving the security service, Yeltsin called the ministry unreformable, ineffective, a burden on the state budget, and a drag on political and economic reform. It was the most serious attack on the state's security apparatus since Yeltsin became Russian president more than 2 years ago. Yeltsin appointed Nikolai Galushko, the current head of the ministry, to run the new reorganized internal security body, and he ordered all current security officers to submit to examinations in order to qualify for the new group. This apparently signals Yeltsin's intent to purge the security apparatus if officers opposed to reform. Yeltsin is said to be bitter that the security ministry did not warn him that anti-reform parties would sweep last week's parliamentary elections. After the 1991 coup in Moscow, Yeltsin pledged to reform the KGB, but besides a new name, little has changed in the security apparatus during Yeltsin's presidency. I'm Mike Schuster in Moscow.
An Amtrak train hit a truck at a crossing near Gary, Indiana today, and city officials say that the truck driver died later as a result of her injuries. The train was on its way to Chicago from New York City, and at least 15 people were injured. There were some 180 passengers on board the train, the Broadway Limited. 11 months ago, another Amtrak train hit a truck at the same crossing. The outgoing head of the New York City office of the FBI has been disciplined for talking about the World Trade Center bombing in a television interview earlier this month. James Fox will be suspended with pay until January 3rd, when he was scheduled to retire anyway. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
Fox was the official who presided over the FBI's New York office during the investigation into the Trade Center bombing. Four men are now on trial for the crime in federal court. Earlier this month, Fox gave a television interview to deny reports that the FBI had been tipped off in advance about the bombing by a confidential informant. Even though FBI officials are prohibited from discussing the case publicly, Fox has often spoken to the media in the past. This time, however, FBI Director Louis Freeh decided to place the 31-year veteran on administrative leave. The action will have no practical effect because Fox was about to retire, but it serves as a warning to other FBI officials not to comment about the case. In New York, this is Jim Zaroli reporting.
The Treasury Department says the government spent more than $38 billion more than it collected last month. November's shortfall came after a deficit of more than $45 billion in October. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials moved down more than 10 points in heavy trading. This is NPR News. In Bosnia, UN aid flights have been suspended again after a plane was hit by gunfire. After promises from all sides that UN aid planes will not be targets again, officials announced that flights to Sarajevo will resume tomorrow. It's the fifth time a plane has been hit in 6 weeks. However, there have been no injuries from these attacks, and no UN planes have gone down. Meanwhile, heavy fighting continues around the capital city of Sarajevo. A UN-sponsored mission to Angola is denying charges that government forces last week tried to assassinate rebel leader Jonas Savimbi. NPR's Suni Khalid reports.
Angola's ambassador to France, Bonventura Cardosha, accused the UNITA rebel group of attempting to find excuses to break off the latest round of peace talks. Negotiations between UNITA and the Angolan government broke off in Lusaka, Zambia last week when the rebels claimed government bombing near the central city of Quito was aimed at killing leader Jonas Savimbi. UNITA claimed that two of Savimbi's bodyguards were killed when government planes swooped down on an open-air rally being held by Savimbi. Savimbi escaped unhurt, but the rebels have yet to return to the peace talks. Meanwhile, the leaders of seven southern African nations, the so-called frontline states, urged the United States, Russia, and Portugal to pressure both UNITA and the Angolan government to end their long civil war. More than 100,000 people have been killed since full-scale bloodshed resumed a year ago. I'm Suni Khalid in Washington.
Winter storms have killed at least two people in Germany and closed traffic along the Rhine for more than 30 miles. A number of towns in Germany have been cut off by high waters that also closed schools. In Belgium, floodwaters forced hospital officials to move some patients, and bad weather has also affected oil exports from Norway. In trading today in Europe, the dollar moved down against other major foreign currencies. Gold prices also dropped. This is National Public Radio News.
This is Fresh Air. Today and tomorrow, we're looking at the issue of violence on television. The government is threatening to step in. Attorney General Janet Reno and Senator Paul Simon have warned that if the TV industry doesn't make a move to reduce violence, the government will. Brandon Tartikoff headed NBC's entertainment division from 1980 to 1992. He moved the network out of last place into first. Now he has his own independent production company. He, too, is concerned about violence in America, but as for TV, he says there's actually less violence on the networks now than there was 5 years ago.
There actually is more action shows. There are more action shows in syndication than there are actually on the networks. Programs that that appear on either independent stations or are syndicated across the country to the stations that take them, like The Untouchables and Acapulco Heat and Renegades and Time Tracks, things like that. Right now, the reason action shows are in such low volume is because of the cost. I mean, that's kind of the irony for me in this whole situation, is that everybody's coming down on violence, and the major networks can't afford to put violence on because it costs too much. It costs too much for car chases and, Uzis firing rounds of ammunition like they used to on Miami Vice and Crime Story and other programs.
So that's why there's so many sitcoms as opposed to dramas and action shows on network TV?
I think the reason there's so many sitcoms is because right now that seems to be the only program form that has syndication value. In other words, has an afterlife after its network run on local stations being stripped for play on, afternoon slots or in the late evening, 11 o'clock at night or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Those kinds of properties hold up better 3 or 4 years after their network run.
You know, Senator Simon, who's spearheading this campaign against violence on television, came up with a law 3 years ago that enabled the television networks to get together to come up with some kind of standards for lowering violence on TV without being subjected to violation of antitrust laws. And he says that the networks met after that, and that's one of the reasons why there's less violence on TV than there was before. Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, well, I think the nature of Hollywood is that it immediately reacts to a situation. I'm not saying that that's going to be a long-lasting effect. Certainly the congregation of executives, producers, writers, whatever, that took place last August in Hollywood resulted in a lot of the kind of true crime dramas, the movies of the week, the Amy Fisher type movies, or the kinds of movies where one member of the family kills another or some jealous husband goes after his wife's boyfriend, those kinds of movie forms that have been very prevalent in the last few years have been lessened, mainly because advertisers have not been that friendly to them, and also because executives are afraid if they put on too much of that kind of stuff now, that there's a watchdog in Congress that is going to call them to task for it.
What happened at that meeting last August? This was a meeting organized in response to Senator Paul Simon?
Yeah, well, I wasn't at the actual meeting because I live in New Orleans now, but, from the reports that I read, it seemed like there was a lot of speechifying, a lot of people getting up and making articulate, impassioned speeches about, you know, the First Amendment and their rights as creators to realize their visions on TV, and then other people saying, yeah, but you've got impressionable minds and you're contributing to the problem, and whatever. I think the resolution of that meeting was certain standards relating to violence and the amount of tonnage that would be acceptable, and certainly the networks pledging that they would, you know, that they would address the problem. And I think, in the immediate sense, what they did is anybody who came into their offices over the next few weeks and few months, peddling something that could be perceived as being a violent show or having a violent quotient to it, didn't make a sale. I'm not so sure that that's the case now, but I know that that was certainly the case in September, October, and November.
Do you consider this a good thing, or do you consider this the chilling effect of the congressional threats?
Well, anytime somebody starts to make noises about, you know, we should restrict you about the amount of this or that that you can put on the airwaves, I think you get into real dangerous waters. I mean, if somebody from Congress or in the government, like Attorney General Reno, says, you know, I don't really like all this violence, we're going to come down on you guys for it, you're only a couple of steps away from somebody saying, you know, we don't really like all the sexual matters and sexual content to some of your programs, we're going to restrict that too. And what you're going to end up with is with a situation where you're going to have the equivalent of electronic book burning. And people are going to say, you know, we don't really like the political views that you have expressed in your news programs and your take on what our foreign policy is over here. And once they're in your backyard, you can't really easily get them out of your backyard. And I think, you know, the broadcast medium has been there for 50 years. It certainly served the country well. It certainly put on a lot of great things. And I don't know why, you know, now that we're about to hit the millennium, that we have to have, you know, legislation and censorship and labeling and everything else. I think what we need is executives to have the, you know, the right moral standards and the ability to exercise good judgment and good taste.
My guest is Brandon Tartikoff, former head of NBC's entertainment division. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Brandon Tartikoff. Given the reality of the situation, do you think it would be smart of the television industry to create more guidelines for self-regulation in order to fend off legislation?
Well, I think I'll speak for the four networks right now. I think what they have to do is that they have to have follow-through on what happened last August. In other words, they can't do what they often do, which is over time, sort of as the months accumulate from last August to wherever we're going to be in the early spring, they can't forget the messages that were being put to them in that, you know, get together last August. I also think that it probably would be smart to have a body like the MPAA is for movies that could look at the content of the various programs. Again, most of the offenders to the violence issue exist outside of network television. It exists on cable entities. It exists in independent syndication with a lot of the one-hour action shows. But I think that an MPAA-like body is probably not a terrible idea, assuming that they're a rather rational group.
What Senator Simon has proposed is a report card that would be issued to the television networks, cable and broadcast, that would evaluate how it's doing on the issue of violence. What would you think of that?
I don't know. It seems like there are bigger issues in our society that we should be dealing with than, you know, grading systems for networks and stuff like that. I think the issue of violence on television was a real convenient issue for everybody to get behind. Once you raise that issue, I can see that it's very tough for a politician to get off the bandwagon, having stirred it up, because, you know, they love hearing the cheers and they love, you know, they love being in the press and everything. The business of television is a 365-day-a-year job. Everybody works real hard at their jobs, so everybody doesn't have time to sit and take their pulse and do report cards and everything else. I think, you know, responsible people are going to do their jobs responsibly, and they don't need some higher body legislating whether they've been good or bad, you know, in the given time frame or the past year. What I think needs to be done on television is to put on, you know, an exciting variety of programs. A lot of divergent tastes, divergent cultures need to be represented on television. So morally, I'm opposed to anything that starts removing certain kinds of content from the overall spectrum of television. We're about to move to a 500-channel universe. It's going to be rather sad that with the technology to have all of those different channels filled with a cornucopia of different kinds of program formats, that we're going to now restrict, we're going to remove, you know, 25% of the spectrum just because we've got an arbitrary group of legislators that feel that they can get passage on something to that effect.
In your years as a network executive, did you ever face pressures similar to the pressures now being faced by network executives on the issue of violence?
Most of the pressures that I would feel during my time, which was pretty much during the decade of the 80s, was pressure not necessarily from legislators, but from advertisers and occasionally special interest groups on the issue of sex and occasionally violence. I mean, nothing gets a programmer's attention more than the head of sales calling them up and saying that they can't sell one unit in a program because no advertiser wants to be in it. And you don't need Congress to affect that. That already happens.
Brandon Tartikoff is the former head of NBC's entertainment division. He now heads his own production company. We'll talk about TV violence with TV critic David Bianculli in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Linda Wertheimer's with us. Let's see what's coming up on All Things Considered. What do you have, Linda?
Terry, we have a piece from Mike Schuster in Moscow on Zhirinovsky, the controversial leader of the Liberal Democratic Party, who's causing Yeltsin so much trouble over there. President Clinton is enjoying a week in which his popularity polls have reached new heights, but there are potentially embarrassing stories coming out of Arkansas. Mara Lyson will be with us to talk about that. Also, Ali Furlow on Paris at Christmas, and a report from the Middle West, Indiana, where kids dressed in hip-hop clothing are being discriminated against in their all-white schools, and a story on bugs in government offices, the creepy-crawly kind.
Thanks, Linda. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. Few people watch more television than our TV critic, David Bianculli. So we wanted to get his thoughts on the violence controversy. I asked him if he gets the impression that some of the people at the forefront of the debate don't watch much TV.
Most of them don't. They've told me that directly. And it maddens me that they're not fluent in what they're arguing against. They just don't watch a lot of it.
Who told you they don't watch TV?
Paul Simon. When he called me feeling out the idea of a viewer panel sort of thing was one. And because I'd written an open letter in the Daily News saying, look, the people who are the violence counters don't watch a lot of television, and they're just counting. They're not doing context. The social scientists have their own agenda to grind. The network people only watch the stuff that they produce for their own network. And the politicians watch very little. I mean, they should be busy being politicians. So there's nobody in the debate right now that's watching everything that's out there except for viewers and TV critics.
You watch a lot of TV. You watch TV.
I watch
TV
too much TV.
Day in and day
yes.
out. Do you think there's a problem with too much violence on television?
Not where they're aiming and saying the problem is. I don't think in network television right now there's much of a problem at all. It's less violent than it was in 85. It's less violent than it was in the late 60s. In commercial syndicated first-run television, so much more TV is being produced that that's where one of the problems is on broadcast TV, both in first-run programming like The Untouchables and Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, and in off-network programs that were produced in the 60s and 70s and 80s that are now being put in along with adult programming during early evening hours on local stations.
What are the shows on the network schedules now that are perceived by people in Congress as being too violent? Can you think
well,
of any?
They don't even perceive all the right ones. They're pointing out things like a bar fist fight on Love and War, when it's obvious they haven't seen any other examples of that situation comedy to realize what a stupid choice that is. Or they'll take a movie that is on one time in sweeps and they'll say, aha, that's terribly violent, or just the title of one. The opposite extremes in primetime are like NYPD Blue on ABC and Walker, Texas Ranger on CBS. The first one is a wonderful show which has some violence in it, but if you watch the program, it's totally defensible and interesting and, I think, adult and mature. On the other hand, you have Chuck Norris in Walker, Texas Ranger just, you know, kicking people and being stupid, and CBS puts it on anyway because it's very popular. Another dilemma.
Now, what about made-for-TV movies? I know, for instance, there's one person, Kent Conrad, a Democrat from North Dakota, who has been denouncing an NBC made-for-TV movie that hasn't been shown yet called Witness to Execution.
Hasn't been made yet.
Hasn't been made yet.
Yes.
Even.
I mean, this is. I wish I could get into this sort of criticism. It would save me so much viewing time. You know, I'm going to hate all next year of Full House, so just keep me away from it.
So he's denouncing a movie that hasn't even been made.
Right. And what he's talking about is concept rather than context and content.
What's the concept of the film that he's
denouncing? The concept is that in a 500-channel universe, maybe one channel is going to try and stand out from all the others by broadcasting a live execution. In context, it could be very interesting or it could be terrible. But the idea is you really ought to allow them to make these things and to show them and then judge them.
An NBC network executive said that this criticism is an example, quote, of the corrosive atmosphere of censorship that is being created, unquote. Do you think this controversy about violence in television is creating an atmosphere of censorship?
Yes, but it's also there's also a corrosive atmosphere of bad taste. I'm not going to let the networks off the hook. When you have, you know, all these Amy Fisher movies or you have people rushing to get in Waco and everything else, if I were a network programmer right now, I would take the high road and say, for one season, no made-for-TV docudramas. We're going to go back and make things up. Now, there may be violence in them, but we're not going to chase off the headlines and go down and do rights. We'll leave that to the other guys because of this frenzy. And at the end of the year, I would either be a wonderful promoted network programmer or else I would be fired because I would have lower ratings than the other guys.
The networks are facing a January 1st deadline issued by Paul Simon, Senator Paul Simon, mm-hmm. who said unless the TV industry comes up with some system of regulating itself, there's going to be legislation that will do the regulation. What's the inside buzz here? Is the industry going to come up with something?
Last inside buzz I had on this was, I guess, a conversation with Howard Stringer, who's the president of CBS, about 2 weeks ago. They're afraid inside the industry. A lot of this is very vague and probably his opinion, not everybody's. But they're afraid of forming any sort of a committee because of therefore validating the debate more than they want to. But the catch-22 there is if they don't assemble somebody, will Congress? And if Congress does, will it be an objective group or the same sort of dunderheads they've been having for the last—well, I shouldn't say they're all dunderheads. But boy, if you watch enough TV to watch the debate about TV on TV, it's like, beam me up, Scotty. These people don't know what they're talking about, but they're up there talking about it.
What kind of precedent would it set if the industry did create some kind of body to regulate itself on violence?
It depends on what the mandate is. I mean, if it's something like the MPAA in motion pictures where all you're doing is saying, these are the general guidelines, let's put a rating system on. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think most viewers have a problem with that. When it comes to saying this sort of content cannot be in during these hours, then you're really defining, you really are encroaching on First Amendment rights there.
You have young children.
Yeah, 9 and 11.
How do you deal with programs that you want to make sure they don't see?
Well, I don't let them see them. I mean, the idea of parents abdicating responsibility to the television set, I think, is ridiculous. And there are things that I have to, but even with Beavis and Butthead is a perfect example. I had to watch that for a long time and then even watch a couple episodes with my children before deciding I didn't want them to see it anymore. But they're aware of it. Sociologically, it's in the classroom and other parents do, but there were very specific objections that I had to the potentially imitative behavior and the language that I didn't want. On the other hand, I sit there and watch The Simpsons with my kids and have no problems as long as I'm there with my kids to say, this isn't proper, this is only a joke. If you're there as a parent, no matter what you decide is proper, that's TV doing its job, parents doing their job, entertainment doing its job.
You know, a lot of people in the debate are saying this. You might be a parent who's home and edits what their children see, but a lot of young, impressionable kids don't have parents who are at home or don't have parents who care enough.
Right, then they've got much bigger problems than television. That's the absolute truth. I mean, if the economy forces people so that they've got latchkey children, and if these, if there's kids who are either watching television or else, out looking at drug dealers on their streets, I mean, which is worse? I mean, Japan is the only society that I know of that watches more TV than we do and that has more violent culture brought through television than we do. 1990 or 91, they had 87 deaths by handguns, and there were more than 10,000 in the United States. It's not television. It's not just television.
David Bianculli is TV critic for Fresh Air and the New York Daily News. Our program on TV violence was produced by Amy Sallet with Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Joan Tui, and Nancy Greenlees. Research assistance from Louisa Shafia. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, in part two of our discussion on TV violence, we'll talk to people who are versed in the language of violence on screen. David Milch, co-creator of NYPD Blue, John McNaughton, director of the film Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, Walter Hill, director of The Warriors and now Geronimo, and Charles Dutton, the star of Rock. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.